This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manicero.
Hello, old dogs, and welcome to
Fun Facts Friday.
This is our once a week, only on Friday show, where we have special episodes not featuring guests, where I will share tricks, tips, terminology, and techniques that will help skyrocket you to real estate investing success. Today's topic is 10 real estate investing rules of thumb every investor should know. Well, when it comes to investing in commercial real estate, or at least multifamily real estate, it's not as complicated as some people may make it out to be. There are some simple shortcuts and methods that can help make some of the more complicated stuff of real estate investing a little easier. When analyzing deals, for example, in the interest of time, there are certain established rules of thumb that help us quickly and easily determine whether the property or asset we are assessing is a good deal or not. The term rule of thumb is said to have originated with carpenters who used the width of their thumb to measure things. The term has also been associated with farmers who use their thumbs as a measurement to plant seeds the proper depth. In either case, you can see that the rule of thumb is an approximation or a quick way to estimate a value. It's not really meant to be an end-all rule for you. But this technique in real estate investing can be a way to shorten the amount of time that you take to analyze a deal while still not rushing into a decision that isn't really right for you. Investopedia defines a rule of thumb as a guideline that provides simplified advice regarding a particular subject. And I'm here to show you that by adhering to several rules of thumb, you can be on your way to easy property analysis and hopefully a successful career in real estate investing. We offer a 3-minute rental property analyzer for free on our website at the olddogsreinetwork.com website. And we use many of these rules of thumb for quick property analysis. You can see quickly some of the numbers and ratios that we refer to are going to refer to here in the 10 investing rules of thumb. So here are 10, and there are more, and I just, you know, came up with 10 that I use on a pretty regular basis that I think might be helpful for you. One of which is one I call the 20% rule. And simply stated, I always try to buy a property at least 20% below market value. I know that that's really hard to achieve and not always possible, but that's my target going into it. The reason being is that you have instant equity when you buy that property. It allows for things like market corrections or economic factors that can reduce your property values to not, you know, hurt you too significantly. If you have to get out of a deal or get out of a property sooner than planned, you won't likely lose money on the sell if you come into it at least 20% below market. The old adage, the money is made at the buy, is a smart general rule and one that can often be achieved. Number two, vacancy, a number that we look at pretty often. Let's begin with sort of a simple one. What percentage of the property's total potential gross income is being lost to vacancy? A high property vacancy can be an indicator of many different things. Down units, in need of rehab or repair, poor management, rents are too high, a bad area, low demand. In either case, it's a red flag to investigate further. Start off by collecting some market data so you will know what is typical for the type of property in that particular location. Does the property you own or may buy differ very much from the norm? Obviously, much higher vacancy is not good news, and you'll want to find out why. But if vacancy is far less than the market, that may mean that rents are too low and/or the demand is strong in an area. If you're the owner, this is an issue you need to deal with. If you're a potential buyer, this may signal an opportunity to acquire the property, create value, and get higher rents. What is a good rate? Well, some conservative lenders won't lend on anything higher than 20% vacancy. But as an owner, our goal should be to no more than 5% once we get that property operating properly. Number three, loan to value, or LTV. The typical lender is generally willing to finance between 60 to 80% of the lesser of the property's purchase price or its appraised value. Conventional wisdom has always held that leverage is a good thing. It's smart to use other people's money if you can in this factor here. The caution here is to beware of too much of a good thing. The higher the LTV on a particular deal, the riskier the loan is. It doesn't take much imagination to recognize that in the post-meltdown era, the cost of a loan in terms of interest rates, points, fees, etc., may rise exponentially as the risk increases. Having more equity in the deal may be the best or perhaps the only way to secure reasonable financing. If you don't have significant cash to make a substantial down payment, then consider assembling a group of partners so you may acquire the property with a low LTV and therefore with optimal terms. Number four, debt coverage ratio, or DCR, or also known as DSCR, debt service coverage ratio. It's the ratio of a property's net operating income to its annual debt service or mortgage payment. NOI, as you will recall, is your total potential income, less vacancy and credit loss, and less operating expenses. It's calculated as follows. DCR equals NOI, net operating income, divided by annual debt. If your NOI is just enough to pay your mortgage, then your NOI and debt service are equal, and so their ratio would be 1. In real life, no responsible lender is likely to provide financing if it looks like the property will have just barely enough net income to cover its mortgage payments. You should assume that the property you want to finance should show a DCR of at least 1.2, but prefer something as high as a 1.6, which means your net operating income must be at least 20% more than your debt service. For certain properties or in certain locations, the requirement may be even higher, but is unlikely even to be lowered. Most smart investors will look for a DCR of 1.3 to 1.4. At that point, the property is producing 30% more revenue than the cost of the mortgage, practically guaranteeing that you'll meet all of your obligations and have cash flow left over. Number five, capitalization rate, or cap rate. The cap rate expresses the ratio between a property's net operating income and its value. Cap rate is calculated as follows. Cap rate equals NOI divided by value. Typically, it's a market-driven percentage that represents what investors in a given market are achieving on their investment dollar for a typical type of property. In other words, it's the prevailing rate of return in that market. Appraisers use cap rates to estimate the value of an income property. If other investors are getting a 10% return, then at what value would a subject property yield a 10% return today? Remember first that the cap rate is a market-driven rate, so you need to speak to appraisers and commercial brokers to discover what rate is a common rate in your market for the type of property you're dealing with. And again, you want to compare apples to apples. You don't want to take a property that is a property and compared to a C property. Rates can go as low as 3%, 5%. I think in California, it may even be down to 2% in some places here, corresponding to very high valuations. And as high as the mid-teens, very low valuations usually associated with those. With historical averages, probably bunched close to 8 to 10%. So if you're investing for the long term, and if the cap rate in your market is presently pushing the top or the bottom of the range, then you need to consider the possibility that the rate won't stay there forever. Look at some historical data for your market and take that into account when you estimate the cap rate that a new buyer may expect 10 years down the road. My rule of thumb is that I target 8 to 10% minimum cap rate. There's too much work involved if it's less than that. You need to be compensated properly for the additional risk and work involved. Number six, cash flow. Cash flow is king is our motto here at the Old Dogs Network. If you can first project that your property will have a strong positive cash flow, then you can exhale and start to look at the other metrics to see if they suggest satisfactory long-term results. Negative cash flow means reaching into your own pocket to make up the shortfall. There's no joy in finding that your income property fails to support you, but rather you have to support your property. On the other hand, if you do have a strong positive cash flow, then you can usually ride out the ups and downs that may occur in any market. An unexpected vacancy or repair is far less likely to push you to the edge of default, and you can sit on the sideline during a market decline, waiting until the time is right to sell. Overambitious financing tends to be a common cause of weak cash flow. Too much leverage, resulting in greater loan costs and higher debt service, can mark the tipping point from a good cash flow to none at all. Again, take a look at LTV and DCR, as I referenced earlier. For me, I will not buy a property that yields less than 100 per door or per unit. Obviously, I prefer 200 to 300 if possible. But if after all expenses and anything that's projected, I can get 100 a door, that's how I do most of my projections. Again, with the 3-minute rental property analyzer that I give away on the website, I always go to the cash flow column first and see what the cash flow is. And then I can also look at the cash flow per unit as a means for, again, for a quick, immediate assessment. Number 7, cash on cash return. A cash on cash return is simply the return an investor receives on the amount of cash that is invested in the deal. To calculate this figure, take the annual cash flow from the property and divide it by the total cash invested. For example, if you receive $10,000 in cash flow and you invested $100,000 in cash, then your return would be $10,000 divided by $100,000, or 10%. We strive to put in as little of our capital as possible in order to obtain the highest return of capital back as quickly as possible. The goal of any real estate investor is to control as many properties with as little money invested in each deal as possible. This strategy will explode your wealth because each property should be cash flowing and each property will be appreciating in value. Our number one rule is to buy properties that cash flow every month. We will never purchase a property that has a negative cash flow. My rule of thumb for cash on cash return is to strive for 10% minimum, but try to get at least 12% targeted return or greater based on actual performance. Always analyze properties based on actual numbers. Again, you know, we're talking rules of thumb here, but you really got to get to the real numbers, not some seller's rosy pro forma figures. If the property has the potential to generate substantially higher returns once it's repositioned, then we are willing to drop that figure, let's say maybe 7 or 8%. Just make sure that you can raise the income or lower expenses to raise the return. Number 8, the 50% rule for expenses. One of the most valuable tools to a real estate investor is known as the 50% rule. The rule of thumb states that for a real estate investment, the non-mortgage expenses will usually average out to about 50% of the rent. Let me explain. If you own a fourplex, for example, that brings in $2,000 per month, you can probably assume that over the long run, this property is going to cost $1,000 per month in vacancies, maintenance, and other charges, not counting the mortgage. Now, it's easy to estimate your monthly cash flow by simply taking the amount of money you have left, known as the net operating income, and subtracting out the monthly mortgage payment, which you can find using any online mortgage calculator. But the 50% rule is one we actually built into our 3-minute rental property analyzer as a means to be able to come up with the other factors that we use in assessing value. Number 9, the 1% rule. Another rule of thumb I should mention, and the fastest way to quickly decide if a property is worth pursuing, is known as the 1% rule. Or sometimes it's looked at as the 2% rule, using a different factor there. The 1% rule states that an investment property should rent for at least 1% of the purchase price. So a fourplex, like the one we discussed earlier, which was bought for $140,000, should bring in at least $1,400 per month in total income, which according to our example, it does meet. Some investors choose other ratios, such as 1.5% rule or the 2% rule, to achieve greater returns and greater cash flow. I typically won't buy anything below 1.5 and try to aim for 2, though your percentages may vary on location and risk tolerance. Number 10, unit mix. Again, another factor that may not be looked at by all people, but unit mix is simply the different number of bedroom apartments in a property. So apartments range in size, let's say from having efficiency or studio apartments up to 5 bedrooms, although that's got to be pretty rare out there. An efficiency apartment is usually occupied by a single person and combines the sleeping, living, and kitchen areas. Studio apartments are larger versions of the same footprint, supposedly. The studio will tend to have a larger kitchen. Many investors shy away from these types of apartments because tenant base tends to be more transient, which means the tenants move in and out and can create a high tenant turnover. I, however, have been fortunate to have acquired and targeted longer-term tenants for my efficiency or studio units, some who have rented their studio apartments for 5+ years, helping me to maintain a 90 to 95% occupancy. But it isn't easy. It takes a specific effort. The next size is a 1-bedroom unit, which can also have a higher turnover rate, but not as high as efficiency or studio apartments, typically. Municipalities allow 2 tenants to occupy an apartment for each bedroom, and in turn, it shrinks the tenant pool. However, it all depends where the units are located. 1-bedroom units are favorable for college students, senior citizens, and couples. My preferred unit size, though, to work with is 2-bedroom apartments. They're ideal for most demographics, yet larger families can't occupy them. Larger families tend to cause more deferred maintenance on a unit, another costly expense for landlords. 2-bedroom units are usually the most cost-effective for tenants and are the easiest to rent out. There are also 3, 4, and 5-bedroom apartments, but it's pretty rare for apartments to contain 4 and 5-bedroom units. These sizes are found more often in single-family homes. The key to unit mix is to acquire an asset that has a favorable number of 2-bedroom units in relation to 1-bedroom units. The ideal ratio is 2 2-bedroom units to every 1-bedroom unit. For example, on a 100-unit property, I'd like to see 66 2-bedroom units and 34 1-bedroom. This type of unit mix makes the asset more valuable, and it will make it easier for the landlord to rent out the units as well as choose from a larger tenant base. Tenants also have the option of moving up or down a size without having to leave the property, which also benefits the landlord in that it reduces vacancies. We wouldn't discount a property solely on the tenant mix. It's only one piece of the puzzle, but a rather important one. Well, there you have it. 10 real estate investing rules of thumb that will help you to quickly evaluate as you look for those diamonds in the rough, as I call them, that will generate consistent and significant cash flow for years to come. Again, keep in mind, a rule of thumb is just a quick means to analyze and assess properties. Digging deeper with thorough due diligence and underwriting, looking at every number and critical factor, is very important to your long-term real estate investing success. So once you get that property that looks right, the numbers are good, you just dig deeper and deeper until you feel as confident as you can that that property is all that you hoped it would be. Well, that's it for today. Please note, old dog listeners, everything presented here today, including any references that I had or calculations, can be accessed in our show notes on the Old Dogs website at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog. Again, when you go to the website, there should be a pop-up that'll come up there that allow you to get that 3-minute rental property analyzer free. You don't have to pay anything. It will help you to do those quick assessments as you're looking at a bunch of different properties at a time. So until next time, remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Thanks again for listening, and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.